ladies and gentlemen, the second session of the California Council Conference and Convention is beginning now as we're in session. Hello to the ACB world. We're ACB Radio. We welcome everybody. And I only came to say I must be going, as the wonderful song says, as I'm going to turn the microphone now over to our very able First Vice President, Frank Welty.
Our first order of business is our Credentials Committee report. And so I am going to turn the microphone over to our Credentials Committee Chair, Pam Pology.
I'm going to tell you this. We've had some difficulty between your... I'm working on it. Poor Frank's trying to find me. we've had some problems with your gimpy credentials chair, and gimpier than I is the Braille writer. So I'm going to try to muddle my way through here, and if you guys catch me in a wrong say, you guys can correct me because I can't even read my own writing here. This Braille writer is really sticky.
I tested that Braille writer. Is it bad?
Oh, it's bad.
Okay.
Well, it got a workout, so. Okay. ACB Capital Chapter, President Karen Schrouder, Delegate Karen Schrouder, Alternate Delegate Joni Patchy, Nominating Committee Representative, can't read my writing. Karen, yeah, sorry. Number of hall members is 39, and voting strength is 8.
Let's see if this works.
Okay. Active Blind Inland Valleys, President Alan Ramos, Delegate Ed Crespin, Alternate Christy Crespin, number of members is 12. They have 5 votes in nominating Christy Crespin. Oh, good, that's better. Yeah. Thank you. Okay, where am I? Oh, thank you, Paul. Thanks. Okay,
I can hear you.
Can you guys hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, I don't know if I can. Here we go. Bayview Chapter, President Patty Nash, Delegate Steve Fort, Alternate Maria Mitchell, number of members 49, 10 votes, and nominating is Steve Fort. Braille Revival League of California, President Linda Perrell, Delegate Mike Keithley, Alternate Delegate Linda Perrell, nominating Linda Perrell.
I can hear her.
Yep. Her number of members, 16, 5 votes.
Oh, my. Okay.
California Councils of Council of Blind Students, President Robin Patchy, Delegate Robin Patchy, Alternate Paul Patchy Jr., Nominating Committee Rep Paul Patchy Jr., number of members 12, 5 votes. California Council of Citizens with Low Vision, President Donna Sanchez.
Is your headset plugged into your phone? Okay.
Okay, hold on.
Why it isn't,
but last night when I read it, I wasn't corrected. Okay. Okay. Is Delegate Donna Sanchez? Alternate Bernice Kandarian? Okay, number of members, 72. Okay, five votes. Second, I apologize.
It's not your fault. If we weren't there to give information.
Okay, Delegate Pam Metz, alternate none. And how many members do you have?
26 as of the roster of the 15.
How many?
26.
Okay. 26?
26.
Thank you. My hearing is going too,
That's
I think.
All right.
Okay, number of members is 26. Five votes and nominating Susan Glass. Contra Costa Chapter, President Joel Isaac, Delegate Gabe Griffith, alternate none, number of members 12, five votes, and nominating is Gabe Griffith. Thank you. Hearing a no, I took that as a yes. Okay. East Los Angeles Chapter, President Stephanie Rood, Delegate Stephanie Rood, alternate Rafael Enriquez, number of members 34, seven votes, and the nominating is Stephanie Rood. Fresno Chapter, President Sarah Harris, Delegate Shamir Derrick, alternate Jonathan Finley, number of members 27, five votes, the nominating is Sarah Harris. Thank you. Glendale Burbank Chapter, President Anthony Signorello, Delegate is Anthony Signorello, alternate delegate is James Chamberlain, nominating is Anthony Signorello, number of members is 19. I'm sorry, two places and with different numbers, 24 and voting strength 5. Thanks. Okay, Golden State Guide Dog Handlers.
Okay, this is Golden State.
Yeah. Is it 6?
No. How many members?
Yes. So we're at Guide Dog Handlers, President Ken Metz, Delegate Nellie Emerson. Here goes my writing. Alternate is,
Frank
I'm sorry?
Welty.
Frank Welty. Okay, that's what I had, and then they changed it on. Okay. Frank Welty, number of members 49, And nominating is Pamela Metz.
Correct.
Thank you. I had your name on there, they told me to take it off. Greater Bakersfield Council of the Blind, President Chris Fendrick, Delegate David Hendrickson, Alternate Delegate is John Ross. Number of members, 23.
No. It doesn't change.
It doesn't change anything anyway. Thank you. Nominating is John Ross. Okay, is Greater Long Beach in the room?
Yeah.
Is that Robert?
Yeah.
Oh, please, Robert, because I don't have anything for your... I know I saw you, but I didn't see you inside, and I don't have anything, so I need to ask you some questions. Please.
Okay. She's getting ready.
There goes my phone. Okay, President? Okay, just a sec. Be quiet, phone. My phone's still playing Christmas music.
Can you raise your hand, please?
Spearwinder. Okay, who's your delegate, Robert?
I am.
And alternate?
Aisha Wendt.
I'm sorry?
Aisha Wendt.
Aisha Wendt.
Oh. Okay, and how many members?
26.
And you were nominating, correct?
Yes, I was.
Okay, 5 votes?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Don't go, boys. No, thanks. I'm afraid I'll knock it over. Thank you.
Remember those mistakes I was telling you about today? A lot. Some of them had to do with credentials. This is taking longer than usual because Pam has to make up for, frankly, some of the mistakes that we made at the office.
Oh, thank you guys so much. Greater Los Angeles Chapter. President Ken Metz, Delegate Ken Metz, Alternate Delegate Guillermo Robles. Nominating committee is Guillermo Robles. Let's see here. Number of members is, I'm finding it here.
25.
Here it is. You said 25. Yes, and 5 votes. Okay, Inland Empire Chapter. President Christine Bailey. Delegate Christine Bailey. Alternate is Edel Galvez. Number of members, 13. 5 votes, and nominating was Christine Bailey. Orange County Chapter, President Andrea Pitzenbarger. Delegate is Gail Crossan. Alternate delegate is Bonnie Rennie. Number of members, 19. And 5 votes, and nominating is Andrea Pitzenbarger. You're welcome. San Diego Braille Club, President Patricia Bogard, Delegate Charnine Ornelas, Alternate Joseph Lopez. I don't have your members. I'm out. Okay, thank you. You said 2-0, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Number of votes, 5, and nominating is Joseph Lopez. San Francisco chapter. President is Frank Welty. Delegate is Linda Perel. Alternate delegate is David Jackson. Nominated committee rep is Vita Zavali. Number of members, 34. And voting strength is 7.
Yes.
San Gabriel Valley chapter. President Pamela Apology. Delegate, Jesse Flores. Alternate, Steve Aminoff. Number of members, 41. 8 votes. And nominating committee is Steve Aminoff. I better have that one right. Silicon Valley Council of the Blind. President, Susan Glass. Delegate, Susan Glass. Alternate delegate, Lupi Medrano, and nominating is Lupi Medrano. Number of members is 86. And voting strength is 17. Okay, Yosemite Gateway chapter. President Tanya Williams, delegate Tanya Williams, alternate delegate is Gail Miller. Number of members is 38, and voting strength is 8. Okay, and those are all the chapters that are here. So, did you want me to list the ones that were not present?
Yes, yes please, Pam.
Okay, let's see. We have Redwood Empire, San Bernardino. Steve, help me. Yeah, Golden Gate, and I'm missing one. Yes, San Diego chapter.
And Solano.
And Solano, that's what I was missing. And those are the ones that are...
And Humboldt. And Humboldt.
Humboldt, yes. See, Humboldt. Those are the missing chapters. So I'm trying to keep track of who's missing and who doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah. Okay.
So I appreciate you guys' patience with me, and that concludes my report.
Okay.
Thank you, Pam.
Order, please. You've all heard the report. Order, please. Ladies and gentlemen, let's have order.
I don't think you're on, Frank.
Do you have your mic on? I wonder if it's...
Microphone, please.
You can use this one.
Yeah. Give me one on the stand.
Okay. Let's have order, please. I will entertain a motion to accept the credentials report. It's been moved and seconded. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor of accepting the credentials report, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Abstentions? The report has been accepted. Thank you, Pam.
Thank you, Frank.
Now it will be our privilege to hear from another one of our gold sponsors this evening. Representing Wells Fargo is is Ms. Kathleen Martinez. Is Kathleen Martinez in the room? Okay, as Kathy comes up to the front, I'm going to tell you a little about her. Kathleen Martinez is Senior Vice President and Head of Disability and Accessibility Strategy at Wells Fargo. In this role, she oversees the development and execution of enterprise business and marketing strategies supporting people with disabilities and their families. Martinez defines strategies related to online and physical accessibility for customers and team members, hiring and promotion of team members with disabilities, national nonprofit partnership programs, and disability-owned suppliers. Martinez joined Wells Fargo in 2015 from the U.S. Department of Labor, where she served as Assistant Secretary of the Office of Disability Employment Policy, ODEP. Prior to that, Martinez was Executive Director of the World Institute on Disability, and she served on the National Council on Disability, the board of the U.S. Institute for Peace, and the State Department's Advisory Committee on Disability and Foreign Policy. It's with great pleasure that we welcome Ms. Martinez to our convention.
I'm going to hand her. Here's one. It's
just working. A minute. Oh, my God. I got to put some. Wait. Is this working? Yeah, it's working. No, I got to stand. Hi, everybody. Thank you for allowing me to speak here. I'm always fascinated to see the process. As you know, some of you know me for years. I'm getting up there. And, well, it's just really a pleasure to be here. And I want to just congratulate Judy Wilkinson on her leadership. I think she's doing a phenomenal job. And we're very happy to be a sponsor. Wells Fargo is honored and privileged to be a sponsor of this conference. And I'm going to stick around for probably next 24 hours. So I hope I get to talk to folks and meet some of you. Anyway, I want to just talk about what's going on at Wells Fargo. Some of us have been working with banks. I was talking to Steve Mendelson, and he and I started our work with Wells Fargo about 20 years ago when some of us decided that it was time to really honor the concept of financial justice and work with banks to make their ATMs accessible. And I want to just give a shout out to Steve because he had a huge role in making that happen for not just Wells Fargo. So at Wells Fargo, we're really committed to what we're calling, we're committed to having disability as an investment. Some people have used the term excellent business opportunity. We know that the disability market is a huge market, and we also know that the disability population, including those of us who are blind, have very low unemployment rates. And Wells Fargo is doing a lot in different areas. So first of all, let me just talk about our external services. We're looking at what we call the workplace, the marketplace, and the supply chain. And we are absolutely committed to diversity. We have a vision and values where we really believe in diversity and inclusion, and we believe that the more voices at the table, the better product you get. So Wells Fargo is really walking the walk when it comes to disability. We've hired some extremely talented people, and not just at entry-level positions. We are hiring people at entry-level positions, but we are also hiring people at some pretty senior positions, including the one in marketing. But we've also hired a brilliant leader for our digital and online accessibility. Many of you probably know Dina Wainwright from Minneapolis. She's done an amazing job the last 2 years, really helping us kind of understand the concept of accessibility, not as an afterthought, but as something that needs to be integrated into design and development from the beginning. And that's really what we're trying to do. So, as you know, we are committed to providing accessible products and services to our 70 million customers, along with their personal and professional networks. And these folks manage their financial needs through lots of channels. Mobile devices, personal computers. We still have folks that are receiving Braille and large print statements. Actually, we still have folks that are receiving audio tape and statements on CD. So, you know, we're really trying to meet people where they're at. We know that there's a growing senior population, many of whom are losing their vision, and this is something that is, you know, is something that we're taking very, very seriously. We, as many of you know, have put JAWS screen readers in all 6,000 branches. We used to call them stores, but now they're called branches. So if you want to go in your branch and check out your, let's say you didn't bring your iPhone or your laptop and you want to have a private session, there are JAWS screen readers on our in-store computers. And we're really committed, like I said, to meeting people where they're at in their process of getting their bank information. Our goal really is to help our customers succeed financially by providing experiences that are ultimately seamless and integrated consistently into our services. Like I said, we have a digital accessibility program manager and office that are really ramping up our digital accessibility in all our various lines of business. So, and I want to thank everybody that has written to me. We have just done a refresh of the website, and I know there's some sticking points. I will say that we are working on them, and all your feedback has been amazing. So thank you. I've had some really good, very detailed feedback about certain parts of the website. I haven't gotten as many complaints about the mobile site, but definitely we know we have work to do on our online website, and we're working on it as fast as we can. With regard to employment, we have a dedicated team that's serving particularly vets and people with disabilities. If you go to our wellsfargo.com career site and look at jobs, and if you are, you know, if you feel like you're qualified, definitely apply. If you have problems, you can let me know, and I will get you to the person to help you apply in a way that is, is helpful. Sometimes we have to have people apply over the phone. Other times people are very able to use our website. So it just depends. We are always looking for talent at every level of the organization, and I know there's lots of talent in this room. We are actively a part of lots of different employment portals, including the Talent Acquisition Portal. We work with the Department of Rehab. We work a lot with the National Federation of the Blind. We work with just as many people as possible to find qualified applicants with disabilities. We are actively seeking out people to work for the bank. With regard to supplier diversity, we have a very active and wonderful leader for supply chain at Wells Fargo. She is very involved in the United States Business Leadership Network, and that's the organization that certifies disability-owned business enterprises. We are, again, seeking disability-owned businesses to become part of our diverse supply chain. And we're also interested, we also have a program at Wells Fargo called the Wholesale Accelerator Program, where we help small businesses that are just getting started. There's a competition, and the winner gets a little bump, as they say, a few thousand dollars to help grow their business. And along with that, they get help and advice from our small business experts at the bank. So I feel like we really are moving in the right direction. As we know, it's a marathon, not a marathon, not a sprint. And I just want to say that Wells Fargo welcomes everybody as customers, as employees, or we call them team members, and or as our part of our supply chain. So thank you all very much, and have a great convention.
All right. I think we have time for a couple of questions, a couple of brief questions. No?
Yeah, we have a few questions, a few hands up.
I'm getting that Okay, so if you want to speak to Ms. Martinez, just watch for her. She's around, so she'll be here for the next day. All right, we will move on to our next presenter, and some of you have probably heard of Vanda Pharmaceuticals. For those of you who haven't, Vanda Pharmaceuticals Incorporated is a biopharmaceutical company focused on the development and commercialization of medicines to address unmet medical needs. Vanda is committed to providing education and awareness for schizophrenia and non-24-hour sleep-wake disorder, non-24, a chronic circadian rhythm disorder, which is a problem for many blind folks. Today, they are also one of our silver sponsors here at the convention this year. So we're going to hear an update on Vanda Pharmaceuticals by Christine Sario Valdez, who is Vanda Pharmaceuticals Regional Sales Director for California. Christine, are you in the room? Very good.
Hello. Oh, it's okay. That's okay. Thank you for the introduction, Frank, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen. How are you guys doing out there? Great! Yay!
We're awake.
Well, it's a great honor to be here today and participate in such an important event. It's been truly, truly wonderful to interact and speak with many of you from the various chapters and organizations across the state. And this in itself has been to me a great demonstration of the inclusivity of all persons within CCB. So I would like to thank Judy Wilkinson, your current president, Jeff Tom, your immediate past president, officers and members of your board of directors for their leadership, for the opportunity to be a sponsor to your convention, and in recognizing the importance of having us here today and tomorrow to speak about non-24 sleep-wake disorder. As you heard, my name is Christine Sario Valdez. I'm the regional director for the Western United States for Vanda Pharmaceuticals. Along with me, I have Jamal Cannon, manager for the San Francisco Bay Area and Fresno, Sarah Ariaza, manager for Los Angeles, Orange County, San Diego, and Palm Springs, and then also Leslie McNeil, our nurse educator for the Western United States. We actually work with organizations like yours to educate as many individuals as possible about the circadian rhythm disorder, non-24. A brief background on it, non-24 is a serious chronic circadian rhythm disorder that's very common in people who are totally blind. It causes nighttime sleep problems, a wide range of daytime difficulties, including an overwhelming urge to sleep during the day that can affect your ability to do everyday tasks or activities at work, school, or in social settings. This morning, we had an opportunity to present to you about non-24, and this evening and tomorrow in the exhibit room, we will be available to speak with you and offer resources, and if you so choose, connect you with a health educator that can speak to you about the condition, its symptoms, treatment, and offer helpful tools and additional resources. If you have any additional questions, Jamal, Sarah, and I will be available this evening afterwards if you guys want to chat. And it is my sincere hope that we have been able to contribute in some small way to CCB
and provide the resources and education about Non-24. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, so if you want to speak to either of our speakers, head to the back of the room and you can find them there. All right. You know something we haven't done yet? That's right, it's a door prize. Let's have a door prize.
Ooh, I have to know what the door prizes are.
Oh, what are the door prizes tonight? Ooh.
We have box of Riddle, and $20 in cash from Yosemite Gateway.
Yummy. Okay, do we have tickets here? Judy's going to draw the ticket.
And
the ticket is... drum roll, drum roll, drum roll, drum roll.
Vicky Parker?
Vicky Parker? Is Vicky Parker in the room?
Vicky Parker?
Stand up, Vicky. Squeak, make noise. Let us know where you are. One more. One more door prize.
Vicky Parker.
She got...
Vicky Parker, can you raise your hand, please?
Stand up and raise your hand, Vicky. There you go. And the back. Back left.
Hey, we have a cool bag of goodies from the Braille Institute.
A bag of goodies from the Braille Institute is coming up next. So, who wants to draw? Who's going to draw? Okay, I'll draw this one. And, sorry guys, they're not in Braille, so I can't pick your name intentionally. Okay, let's see who we got here.
Yes.
And it is?
Bernice Kandarian.
Bernice Kandarian, are you here? Shout out, Bernice. Hey, on the right side there.
Yeah, Bernice,
there,
I know.
All right, now we're all awake. And... now what time is it? It's election time. Yes, indeed. All right. Well, earlier today, you heard the report of our nominating committee. We have the offices of second vice president, secretary, and 5 board members. So, without any delay, let us begin. The person who is nominated from the nominating slate for the position of second vice president is Gabe Griffith. Do I hear any nominations from the floor for the office of second vice president? One more time. Do I hear any nominations from the floor for this office of second vice president? And finally, do I hear any nominations from the floor for the office of second vice president? The motion has been made that nominations cease and that Mr. Griffith be elected by acclamation. It's been seconded. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, say nay. Or no. Or niet. That was for our president. Abstentions, thank you. All right, Mr. Griffith, would you like to say a word? Very good.
Oh, he needs to get to
somebody needs to get Gabe a mic.
Can we get a microphone to Gabe Griffith? He's in the back.
He's in the back.
All right, they're telling me I only get one word, so I'm going to just say thanks.
All right, we will now move on to the office of secretary. The nominee from the nominating committee was Artis Bazin. Do I hear nominations from the floor for the office of secretary? Once again, do I hear nominations from the floor? And finally, do I hear nominations from the floor?
Nominations to close, and she'll be elected by acclamation.
It's been moved that nominations be closed and that Ms. Bazin be elected by acclamation. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed say no. Abstentions. Congratulations, artists. Would you like to say a word?
Yes.
And artists, if you can stand up so that our mic runners can see.
Well, thank you to all of you, and I'll do my best. Thanks.
Thank you, artists. And now we will move on to our board positions, and I will try from memory to do them in alphabetical order, and if somebody catches me, please let me know if I make a mistake. For the first board position, the committee placed the name of Sarah Harris. Are there any other nominations from the floor? Are there any other nominations from the floor? And third time, are there any nominations from the floor? It's been moved and seconded. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed say no. Abstentions. Motion carries and Ms. Harris is elected. Would you? And Sarah, will you favor us with a few remarks, please?
I'm on my way.
You should get your Fitbit on. Hello, everybody. I just want to say thank you very, very much, and I promise to do the best job I possibly can.
Very good. And the next nominee for our board position is Pamela Metz. Are there any other nominations from the floor? Any nominations from the floor? Last call for nominations from the floor.
Move the nominations be closed and Pamela be elected unanimously.
It's been moved that nominations be closed and that Pam Metz be elected by acclamation. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Abstentions? Pam is elected. Pam, would you like to say a few words?
Yeah.
Almost there.
Okay, I said I'd say one word, so thank you.
You guys are making this easy for me.
Really?
All right, we'll move on to our third board position, and the name that has been placed in nomination by the committee is Linda Perrell. Are there other nominations from the floor? Again, are there any other nominations from the floor? Last call, are there any other nominations from the floor? Hearing none, I will accept a motion to close nominations and... So it's been moved to close nominations and seconded and to... elect by acclamation. All those in favor, say aye.
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 All opposed? Abstentions? Congratulations, Linda. You're back. And if we can get a microphone to Linda.
Linda, can you raise your hand, please?
Thank you, everyone. It's such a privilege to have this opportunity to serve on the CC board once again. I promise not to let you down.
And we're going to move on to our fourth position, and that is the position, the person named for that position is Robert Wendt. Are there any other nominations from the floor? Karen, how is that last name pronounced?
Schrader.
The name of Karen Schrader has been placed in nomination. Are there any other nominations from the floor? Are there any other nominations from the floor?
Is there a motion the nominations be closed?
So moved.
And it's been moved and seconded?
Second.
All right. All in favor of closing nominations, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, say no. Nominations are closed, and we move on to the election. Do we have ballots?
Yes, we do.
We do have ballots. All right. Here are the instructions for the ballots. Each of you will each of you with a red...
Order, please.
I will give the instructions. The others, rest of you do not need to do so. Thank you. All right. All of those in the room, in order to vote, you must have a dot, and you must be wearing your badge with a dot on it. All right. So, each of you will be receiving a ballot. If you are voting for Mr. Wendt, leave your ballot intact. If you are voting for Ms., help me with the last name again,
Schrauder,
then tear off one corner of the ballot.
Yeah.
Oh, speech? I'm sorry. Yes. I stand corrected. Ain't it nice to be human? Yes. All right. Mr. Wendt, who are your seconding speeches tonight? Who will be giving your seconding speeches? Linda Perel and Kim Metz. And Ms. Schauer, who will give you... Schreier. I'm going to get it right eventually. Schrauder, thank you. Ms. Schrauder, who will be giving your seconding speeches?
Jeff Tom
and...
Anybody else?
And Joni Apache. All right, then Linda Perel. And again...
How much time, Frank?
Pardon?
A total of five.
Each person has a total of 5 minutes for both speeches altogether, so...
We have somebody who's
going to stop watching. I've got my iPhone here.
Okay.
Give me a second here.
Yes. Linda Perel and then Ken Mintz.
Linda, would you raise your hand so she can find you?
And then
Ken Mintz, raise your hand.
And then Peter, tell us when you're ready.
I'm ready.
Okay, Linda, so you ready to go?
When she starts.
Okay, Linda, as soon as you start, we're ready to go.
If you guys will just please stop saying ready, then I'll know that it's ready. Anyway, okay. So, all right, I'm speaking on tonight for Robert Wendt. I've known Robert for several years. We have served together through many sessions of Resolutions Committee. Getting loose here. Resolutions Committee. Well into the night, and Robert has, we called him the camel because he always drank all the water in the room. He is a clear thinker. He contributes to that committee and has also been the chair of the scholarship committee for several years and is still an active member of that committee. In addition, he has served as president of his local chapter and is very active in his position at Long Beach State. So I encourage all of you to vote for Robert.
Okay, and Peter, how are we doing for time?
We've got 3 minutes and 52 seconds left.
3 minutes, 52? Okay, Ken, you have 3 minutes, 52 seconds.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Robert Wendt is now going for his fourth and final term as a board member for the California Council of the Blind. He started out, obviously, at least 6 years ago in doing this work. He started working on the scholarship committee. He's attended several of the rehabilitation council sessions. And he's always been active in doing that type of work since he is a career counselor at Cal State Long Beach. As a counselor, a career counselor, Robert knows exactly what it's like to be able to work with the scholarship folks. He understands what the students are looking for, what their needs are, and which ones he feels through a lot of the assessments that he's done over many years at Cal State Long Beach in choosing the right people and those that hopefully will also become members of the California Council of the Blind. Robert has dedicated many years, and he blames me for being on resolutions because I talked him into it one time when I was doing that, and he's been on it ever since. He has chaired resolutions. He has co-chaired resolutions. He's stayed up and found out what I meant by 3 and 4 a.m., and it does take that. Robert has a lot of resilience. He has a lot of knowledge. He has a great understanding of the vocabulary that's required in resolutions, and that is the mainstay of what CCB is going to need in order to move forward into the new era of this organization. Robert is willing to go forth with the nuances of what occurs here in the California Council of the Blind. He believes in it, and I'm asking you to please vote for Robert Wen to allow him to demonstrate his last term as a board member for this time around, and also allow him to have his final opportunity to be a big part of continuing the scholarships for our new young members to be. Thank you.
All right, now we will hear the speakers for Karen Schroeder, and we'll start with Jeff Tom, and Peter, just let me know when you're ready.
I'm ready.
Peter's ready. And we need to get a mic to Jeff Tom. Oh, are you coming?
Can I go back where I was?
No, you can come back.
I'm not back.
Good evening. Thank you. I haven't been up here nominating anybody in quite a while, but I felt compelled to do so today because, as I will explain to you, I think Karen Schroeder is the type of new leader we need to produce for the change that's coming to CCB. And we definitely need new leadership to keep this organization thriving and to maximize our potential. So why is it that I believe in Karen Schroeder? She is the chapter president of my chapter. She is truly the best president that I think my chapter has had in, I can't even remember when. And I've gone through a lot of presidents and a lot of good ones. She currently works for the Department of Rehabilitation, and with the department, she has performed several jobs. She has been a rehab counselor. She has been a trainer. And as a trainer, it takes an eye to detail, and it takes patience. And Karen has both of those attributes. And she now works as an analyst on a grant program that the department runs. As president, she has been as inclusive and open and willing to engage all of us as any president I can remember. She makes sure that everybody has a place and everybody has a role in the chapter. She has very frequent board meetings and is always able to bring back board recommendations to our chapter so that we can administer our chapter in the best way possible. She knows that she has a learning curve on this board if she is elected, but she is a quick study, will learn rapidly, and will contribute soon in a way that I am confident will lead to a better CCB. So I urge you to elect Karen Schroeder as a new board member for our organization. Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff.
Two minutes and 50 seconds.
Okay. All right. Joni Patchy, you have 2 minutes and 50 seconds left.
Okay. Karen Schroeder has a lot of energy. You guys need a lot of energy because you got lots of work to do. And you don't ask a busy person to do it, you won't get anybody to do it. So, Karen Schroeder also has a lot of integrity. And she also can get really mad. And it's a good thing, because sometimes you guys need to get someone to get mad at you, right? So do we all. We all need to know what we're doing right and what we're doing wrong. And Karen's a really good judge of that. I think that's what you need. I think if you vote for Karen, you will have a really, really successful year.
All right, thank you all for your fine speeches. Again, we will now distribute ballots. And once again, if you are voting for Ms. I'm sorry. There. Once again, if you are voting for Mr. Wendt, leave your ballot intact. If you are voting for Ms. Schrauer, then Schrauder, I will get it. I'll get it. I just have a, my tongue is just a slow learner, that's all. Then tear a corner off your ballot, and if you have not yet received your ballot, raise your hand so that the people passing out ballots will see that.
And we're going to make our way around the tables to give everyone.
Those of you who are passing out ballots, remember the person must be wearing a badge with a dot on it. All right. All right, if I can... Okay.
We don't have them up here.
Is...
Okay, so, but we can still go ahead.
We're still getting ballots passed out, yes. The ballots are on their way.
Yeah, let's go ahead and start.
All right, I need the list of... Pam. Pampology, I need your list of delegates.
Oh, shoot. Ah, sorry.
All right, if I can have order while the ballot voting continues, I will proceed with the roll call portion of the vote. Please order, please. All right. Oh. ACB Capital Chapter.
I am.
Okay. All right. And you have 7 votes, Capital Chapter.
If you didn't get one, can you raise your hand, please?
8 votes, okay. Oh, yes, I stand corrected. That is 8 votes. Thank you. I was reading the wrong number. All right.
No, not yet.
Yes. Is the delegate from ACB Capital Chapter ready?
Did anyone else not receive one? If you didn't get a ballot, please raise your hand.
Okay. Thank you. All right. Karen Schrauder, are you ready to vote? Okay, is the delegate for Capital Chapter ready to vote?
Yes.
Okay, you have 8 votes. Eight votes for Schrauder, 0 for Wendt. Oh, it's 0 for Wendt, 8 for Schrauder. Excuse me. Active Blind Inland Valleys. Ed?
We have to be able to hear the votes.
Two votes for Shroud, for Wendt, three for Schrouder. All right. Bayview chapter.
Bayview chapter casts 10 votes for Karen Schrouder.
0 votes went, 10 votes Schrouder.
You know what? You put the runner up, you put the person on the ballot first.
Yeah, you put the nominee first and then.
You know what? This is. It doesn't hurt anything.
Okay, Braille Revival League of California.
Braille Revival League of California.
Okay. Is Mike Keithley in the room? Okay, Mike. Cast your vote for Braille Revival League of California. Five votes for Wendt, zero for Schrouder. California Council of Blind Students. Zero for Wendt, five for Schrouder. California Council of Citizens with Low Vision. Five votes for Schrouder. Those of you who are collecting ballots, please do pick up ballots. And if you have not yet had your ballot picked up, raise your hand so they can see you.
Now, remember, Frank, our people have not done this before. So they need to know that people need to put the ballots themselves in the box.
Okay, so they're coming around with the box.
Are they coming around with the box?
Yeah, they are.
Yes.
Okay, so the folks collecting ballots are coming around with a box, so you get to put your own ballot in the box. Okay, California Library Users of America. Five votes, Robert Wendt, zero votes, Schrouder. Contra Costa chapter. One vote went for Schrouder. East Los Angeles chapter. Four votes went, three votes Schrouder. Fresno chapter. One vote went for Schrouder. Glendale Burbank chapter. Three votes went to Schrouder.
Is anybody still on the ballot? Yes, up here.
Oh, of course.
Golden Gate chapter. Excuse me, sorry. Golden State Guide Dog Handlers Incorporated. Zero votes went, five Schrouder.
Does anyone else still have their ballots? If so, please raise your hand.
Greater Bakersfield Council of the Blind. Zero votes went, five Schrouder. Greater Long Beach chapter. Five votes went, zero Schrouder. Greater Los Angeles chapter.
Five votes went.
5 votes went, 0 Schroeder. Inland Empire chapter. 5 votes went, 0 Schroeder. Orange County chapter. 5 votes went, 0 Schroeder. San Diego Braille Club. 4 votes went, 1 Schroeder. San Francisco chapter. 4 went, 3 Schroeder. San Gabriel Valley chapter. 8 votes went, 0 Schroeder. Silicon Valley Council of the Blind.
Silicon Valley cast 5 votes went, 12 votes Schroeder.
5 votes went, 12 votes Schroeder. Yosemite Gateway chapter.
8 votes Schroeder.
All right, 0 votes went, 8 Schroeder. That concludes the roll call vote. Is there anybody who still needs to turn in your ballot? All right, then we will proceed to tally the ballots.
Yeah.
Door prize! All right, what nifty and wonderful door prize do we have?
A Harry and David ACB Capital Checker box. Harry and David goodie box.
A Harry and David goodie box. Can Harry and David be trusted with a goodie box? I don't know. All right. We have a name. Do we have a pair of eyes who can read a ticket for us? John Vandervoort, are you here? Are you here? No?
Oh, too bad.
It's the gift box. Let's draw again.
Alice Turner.
Alice Turner! Are you in the back, Alice? Where are you? In the back there.
On my way.
Oh, by the way, speaking of Mr. Vandervoort, if anybody knows where they can find Mr. Vandervoort, let him know that the thing he's looking for is in the possession of Peter Pardini. He'll understand. All right.
Can I have the chapters? Are they still counting the chapter votes?
No, we finished those.
Well, the paper vote, so that 26 for 64.
So the chapter, do you have the chapter count?
Yeah, I mean, I have the individual count.
You have the chapter counts, though.
Yeah, 26 for when?
Those are individual.
Yes. Let me just.
Steve has got him.
Hey, Alexa. Hey, Alexa, play Jeopardy. Thank you.
I think we have a room full of Jeopardy addicts who are going into withdrawal right now because they missed it tonight. Oh. The things we sacrifice for CCB. Do we have a result?
Yes, I do, Frank.
Okay, go ahead.
88 total votes for Wendt, 140 votes for Schroeder.
All right.
39% for Wendt, 61% for Schroeder.
Karen Schroeder, would you like to say a few remarks?
Hi, I'm Karen Schroeder.
Schroeder.
If you think of the sea otter, maybe it'll help.
That's good.
Anyway, thank you very much. I will do my best. And like Jeff says, it'll be a learning curve, but I'm eager to learn.
Great.
Great. Great.
Robert, would you care to make a comment? I didn't mean it that way. All right, let us move on to our final board position. This person, the person nominated for this position, is Vivian Younger. Do I hear other nominations from the floor? Second, do I hear any nominations from the floor? And now for last call, do I hear nominations from the floor? It's been moved that well, you know it's been moved. And moved and seconded that nominations be closed and that Vivian Younger be elected by acclamation. All in favor say aye. All opposed say no. Abstentions. Vivian Younger is elected. Vivian, would you like to address the group?
Hey, everybody. Hey. Repeat after me. Yahoo!
Yahoo!
Thank you.
There you go. Thanks.
Okay. All right. Well, I want to thank everybody who has been serving this organization leadership, everybody who continues to serve, and those of you. I want to thank everybody who has been serving this organization as leaders and those who continue to do so, and those who new folks who are joining the leadership team. Thank you all. And this is a reminder that for both present and incoming board members, that we're going to have a photo session after this meeting, so don't run away. And folks, we're like 20 minutes ahead of schedule tonight. Is that amazing? Or? Is it time for a door prize?
What would you like to?
Not yet. We're not ready yet.
Or do you want to?
Do we have a cash?
Okay.
Can we do a cash prize?
We can do a cash prize.
We're going to do a cash door prize. Ooh. Yeah.
Do you feel lucky?
Hey, every prize so far except for one. The person's been in the room.
This is true.
Yeah.
We've been very lucky tonight.
We have $25 from the Capital Chapter plus a bracelet.
$25 and a nifty bracelet from the Capital Chapter. Nifty bracelet and $25. And Peter's going to pick. Peter Pardini, pick a peck of perfect tickets. Joe Smith. Is Joe Smith here?
Is he in the room?
Yell, Joe. All right.
Where?
Is Anthony Stevens in the room? Hello, Anthony. Sorry, I don't have a door prize for you. But I do have a nifty bio of you, Anthony Stevens. Anthony Stevens.
Yes, come forward.
Come forward, Anthony. Tony. Sorry. Anthony Stevens, ACB Director of Advocacy and Governmental Affairs, with over 25 years advocating on social justice issues, Anthony is an expert in Washington on advocacy in advancing the rights and causes of marginalized groups. A journalist by trade, his pursuits have taken him from the halls of ancient monasteries in Latin America to the halls of Congress, where he currently advocates on campaigns impacting Americans with disabilities. Tony sits on the board of the Consortium for Citizens with Disabilities and the Aid Association for the Blind. He lives in College Park, Maryland, with his wife and two young sons. Anthony Stevens, it's a pleasure to have you here this evening.
What up, Tony?
It's
here.
So much.
Yeah,
and there's a mic
somewhere.
Right here to
the left. Are there mics all around?
Yes,
yeah,
there's a mic right
we'll
this chair to the
is
left
it best
here.
To sit or what's the preferred?
Sit. Sit. You can
protocol.
Sit.
Okay.
Be comfortable.
Good, I'll be comfortable. I like comfort.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah,
I like comfort is good.
Too.
Man, California is so laid back.
Dude.
Just have a seat. Relax.
For sure, dude.
Good evening, everybody. Oh, it's 2 hours past my bedtime. Good evening, everybody.
Good evening.
That's what I like to hear. That's what I like to hear. You did save me 20 minutes, exactly. Thank you so much. I've been sitting in the back listening, and it's always great to hear democracy at work here in California as well, just in the sense of our own organization and for the California Council, but all of our councils. That's what's great about having the opportunity to come to state conventions like this, to get a chance to hear all the different places where people come from and knowing that we all come together towards common causes. To that end, I want to extend a huge thank you both to Judy and Jeff for the invitation, for coming here to come have a chance to give you a sense of what's going on in Washington, D.C. right now. You know, primarily because the excitement and enthusiasm of coming to the place where dreams are made as my ability to escape Washington, D.C. In current times right now. And I say this in a sense, I say this in a serious sense of, you know, I came, as was mentioned in the bio there before, I come from sort of grassroots advocacy. And being in Washington, D.C., from someone who had worked a long time in other parts around the world on other human rights causes and social justice causes, I will say in the 7 years I've lived in Washington, D.C. and been doing advocacy in our nation's capital, it is a very unique fishbowl to live in. And regardless of where you stand on the ideological spectrum, we are living in a historic time culturally in our country, as well that's being sort of magnified in Washington, D.C. So, you know, it has been an interesting past few months in Washington, D.C. I'll share a little bit about what's going on there from a larger perspective of our nation, from civil rights perspective, narrowing that down on disability rights, but primarily on the issues we with American Council of the Blind are focused on in setting a short and long-term agenda. And you know, in a sense of what I can say and what's taking place in Washington, D.C., is, you know, a lot of the lens that provides us with information from our nation's capital right now, you know, is is some sense a bit askew. Hollywood obviously is wonderful at putting different filters on things and making things look different than sometimes they are. At the end of the day, I will say, and this is spelled out a lot in some of the advocacy that we're doing on Capitol Hill, is a large amount of the people have not changed over. Even though it seems like, and you know, when I come outside of Washington to parts of the country where a lot of people always ask me, you know, what is it like in D.C. right now? And, you know, what is the sense of such dramatic change? At the end of the day, I'm still working with the same legislative directors that were there 3 months ago. There are still day after day after day hardworking Americans throughout the federal government. And so amidst the political rhetoric that's going on, you know, I think our country is still very much in a stable situation. To that end, there has definitely been, though, some key issues regarding civil rights and protections and regarding the budget with the president's proposed budget. But in addition to how that's going to be playing out over the next few weeks, in addition to later in the summer and probably into early fall when we get 2018 worked out, I'll talk a little bit about that in just a minute. But we are at a historical time politically and culturally, as I said. But as Americans who focus on advocacy for those who are blind or visually impaired, for you know, the several million Americans who are legally blind, but also on the larger issues of vision loss, for the 80 million Americans who are at risk of losing their sight right now through diabetes, through heart disease, through other disabilities, we are at an interesting time historically just for our own population. You know, when I was a kid, I've been legally blind my whole life, went total when I was 15. They were able to restore a tiny slither in one of my eyes. It doesn't really do much, but more of an inconvenience of you know, some might understand that. So, but in a large sense, you know, the culture of blindness over the past generation has also changed. And I don't mean culture in a sense of socially, but in a sense of where our numbers are coming from, where they're going to be as far as the incidence for blindness in our country goes. So I'm gonna be talking a little bit about that and how it frames the context, I think, in a few more minutes toward the end of my presentation here for you all today on the Washington Update. So what's going on in Washington right now? Well, it's a hooray time right now because we're about to go into a two-week recess for the Easter recess, the spring break, for when all of Congress gets on a bus and goes down to the Gulf of Mexico to Panama City Beach, Florida, and parties with MTV. No. What will be taking place the next couple weeks is Congress will be heading back to their districts. Your members of Congress will be coming back here. There will probably be some town halls. There will probably be some opportunities for local engagement. We'll talk about that at the very end, of what we all can do, particularly over the next couple of weeks. I do want to share some good news with everybody. We sent out a press release this morning from ACB, and this will frame up sort of the larger context, particularly on where blindness is right now in our country and the issues that we face in the long term. But there was a bill that we had in the last Congress called the Medicare Demonstration for Low Vision Coverage of Low Vision Devices. And that bill was just reintroduced yesterday by Congresswoman Maloney of New York City. And then we had an additional co-sponsor from Tennessee, a Democrat from Tennessee, and Gus Bilirakis, a Republican from outside Tampa, who's visually impaired himself. And Congressman Bilirakis has been a strong advocate for visual impairment issues in the Congress, and we're thankful for this being a bipartisan bill that right out of the gate we're doing engagement. I sent out a letter on sort of hastily, was working today to get an email out too with some links, those on the leadership list. There will be a call to action. Hopefully you can get engaged with your members of Congress. We'll talk a little bit about that toward the end. So where are we in Washington right now, though? So Congress is going on their recess, and while, yes, it may seem like they're going on vacation for 2 weeks, as I said, there are still all those staffers back in Washington, D.C., and there is still a lot of work being done. At the end of the month, we have what's called a continuing resolution, or the CR, not to be confused with Creedence Clearwater Revival CCR, one of my favorite bands growing up from California. But the CR, not CCR, is, in fact, going to be expiring. So they did a half-year sort of authorization for the budget. Washington works on an October 1st budget, so we are about 6 months in now, a little over 6 months. And so they got to get that amidst the backdrop, too, of what we always hear about the debt ceiling. I'm sure folks have heard that in a lot of the news over many years ago in 2011. There was a lot of talk around the debt ceiling, and that is an issue, too, that needs to be wrestled with. These things need to get done, and then Congress will begin to start working through hearings and through other proceedings to work on the budget for 2018, which will start October 1st. Now, there was a lot of news a couple weeks ago going around about the president's budget. I will say one of the sort of inside baseball things that takes place inside the Beltway, as we call it, around Washington, D.C., is that when the president's released budget, typically those are more party line or not necessarily party line in this sense, but with President Trump working in his first budget to sort of reinforce a lot of the things that were said during the campaign, there are a lot of draconian cuts, and I don't use that word lightly, draconian, unless I'm reading, what was that book about the French painting? Never mind. What was that? Da Vinci Code, that's what it is. So that was the first time I ever really hearing that word incessantly. But anyways, so, there's a lot of posturing that goes on when the White House releases the budget. We saw the same thing with the Obama administration, where the budgets are presented. They're more of like a wish list. Paul Ryan, who's the Speaker of the House, is himself, sort of a champion of the conservative side in trying to craft budgets. He's the type that will go in a room himself and write hundreds and hundreds of pages over a night or a couple of nights of what, the GOP budget will look like. He did that in the past, and I assume what we will start seeing from Congress is going to be a budget more in line with his proposals. The question will be, will the president sort of work in compromising, which we've seen this with the Republicans around health care as well, with the issues with the fact that there are multiple factions within the Republican Party, the moderates and the Freedom Caucus, that makes it very difficult in the House of Representatives to get really any full-line party effort pushed through right now. It's very interesting political time for the Republican Party historically. We'll see how that works out. But so, there's going to be a lot of continued concerns around Medicaid. In a sense, the advocates who were fighting to protect Medicaid in the American Health Care Act, which was the repeal of the Affordable Care Act, a.k.a. Obamacare, there were big threats in the sense that the proposal that was presented would have essentially made Medicaid implode in on itself by 2020, when states had to really carry the major part of the bill, and that raised great concerns. There was that victory of those supporting Medicaid and wanting it to not be cut when the repeal bill did not go through, when it was pulled at the last minute just before a vote a couple weeks ago. However, it is still on the table potentially for tax reform. The way the government works is for several years now, if you want to do something, you want to pay for anything, you got to take money from somewhere else. And so the concern being raised is we are about to enter into also a very large tax package. There hasn't been major tax reform since 1986 in our country. So just when we feel like after it's been 31 years, we finally figured out how to do our tax forms, they might get complex again. The EZ form is always an irony. I always thought to make it easy, whoever branded that. But we will have ourselves sort of working into that probably into the summer, and Medicaid could very well be on the chopping block for that as well. So in terms of health care reform, that's one of the main things, because there are 7 million Americans with disabilities right now that are on Medicaid. It's a major issue for those that get additional supports to assist them in being, maintaining inclusion in their community, home and community-based supports, HCBS is what they're called, the waivers that you can get through Medicaid. So that is an issue on the larger context of the larger disability community that is being fiercely fought out and trying to be protected. There are meetings by disability advocates daily in the House of Representatives, just basically reminding them that, tampering with Medicaid or getting rid of services in a way is not fiscally responsible in the long run. There's a lot of talk now about the long-term, focusing on the long-term, in remembering that while something may make a lot of sense now, we have the tendency to put human lives into numbers in Washington, D.C. That's what analysts are really good at, policy analysts. But nevertheless, there are a lot of voices out there right now, and we are gaining some traction. I think we saw that around the Affordable Health Care Act pushback that helped us sort of secure Medicaid for the temporary time right now. Other areas, We're continuing to watch the Department of Justice to see, you know, we think they'll probably be similar as they were during the Bush administration, where we were pleased to see that they did not get rid of the Office of Civil Rights, which holds the disability rights section in Department of Justice. There's probably not going to be, you know, so much action as there was during the Obama administration. That could be a negative impact in some of the sense that we've had DOJ come to bat for us a number of times during the Obama administration around some accessibility issues, particularly around web accessibility. They're ramping up that area. I will say, though, a number of the attorneys are still on staff there at the disability rights section, so we still have, you know, a sense of those advocates. The same is true. We went through a lot of work last year with the Department of Transportation and negotiated rulemaking across the disability field to make airlines more accessible for Americans who are blind, but also with other disabilities, accessible laboratories and single-aisle aircraft. I was a part of negotiations around that with other disability advocates. We made some headway on some issues. We hit a stalemate around service animals. That was an impasse. But I feel like where the Department of Transportation is right now, again, there are still a number of the attorneys who are staff, career-long, lifelong people who I think get our position in terms of the concerns that have been risen around service animals and emotional support animals, fraudulently, people taking their pets on, fraudulently going online and getting certificates saying my Sparky here, who barks and jumps and does everything, is you know, falsely saying that they're a service animal. You know, our sense is that the Department of Transportation, in some sense, kind of understands our concerns and point of view, I think, in a way that while we did not reach a compromise in negotiations with the airline industry, you know, I look forward to seeing a rule come out probably this summer. We've been told if they'll begin sort of opening the valve, if you will, the floodgate to start letting more regulations start coming through, that hopefully will be promising for that. So those are some of the cross-disability issues that have been working on. We are, you know, in a sense of also standing in solidarity with a large number of the other groups in terms of just, you know, just sort of watching the posturing and administration I'm trying to think of the best way to say this, you know, because it's not a partisan issue. Because we found that, you know, Republicans have also been strong champions for disability rights over the years as well. But it's just in a sense of we've talked about the budget earlier, you know, there's like a significant chunk of money that would be taken out of Department of Justice. So as the budget process goes through, I think all advocates across the board on civil rights issues, on social justice issues, you know, service issues, providing service, Department of Education with RSA, you know, there are certain things that we're just watching because the government, oftentimes, when it does work, and I know there's always complaints about things not working, but when it does work, it is a strong force of monitoring and compliance and making sure that the laws like the Americans with Disability Act, the Rehabilitation Act, things like that are enforced out of the country. So that's where we are right now, as far as sort of the big picture stuff goes. What does that mean, as well as what's going on in Washington right now in the climate for the key issues that really matter for Americans who are blind or visually impaired, or for those that will be joining our ranks in the coming years? We know through research, through the Center for Disease Control and Prevent Blindness, that our numbers are going to significantly spike in the next few years. There are going to be more and more Americans come 2020. That curve is going to curve up toward 2030 as the baby boomers begin to age longer into retirement, as Americans live longer due to quality of life and health conditions and things like that. We're going to find that the incidence of blindness and visual impairment is going to increase significantly. That's going to create some supply and demand issues that we're already beginning to wrestle with right now in Washington, D.C. Primarily, I think a real good example of that is around the area of rehabilitation. As people are going to be losing their sight, we have serious concerns still with the Older Individuals with Blindness Program. We're working with a number of folks in Washington, D.C. to really try to get our heads around, you know, an OIB program 2.0, or what can we do to increase it, where the reality that for a large number of people, they only get on average about $558 of money set aside that can help them with all their rehabilitation needs. Because as well, something called the Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act, which was passed a couple years ago, that bill, which was passed, essentially what it did was it did excellent things for youth. It did a 15% set-aside of all VR funding needs to go for youth transition and something called supported employment services, which are services that really help people with significant disabilities. If you're blind with multiple disability, you know, sometimes you'll need advanced service, job coaching, things like that on the job services. You know, there's a significant chunk of money, 50% of that money has to go towards youth. What that's going to do is it's creating, we're already hearing from some states. I was in Minnesota recently, and they had roughly $170,000 spent for youth. Now they got to spend $1.5 million on youth. That money is money that is needed at a time when our population is going to really be increasing. So it doesn't take, you know, Princeton University or you know, Stanford statistician to sort of see the economics and the issues that we're going to face from sort of a supply and demand issue in trying to get the services. So what do we do around older individuals with blindness program? What do we do with rehabilitation, where there was also something called the homemaker exemption, which hasn't impacted every state, but in states where you used to be able to get rehabilitation services, even if you weren't going back to get a job, you would be called a homemaker outcome. That's gone as well. So there's a lot of work. We're still waiting to find out who the new RSA commissioner is. You know, Betsy DeVos, the Secretary of Education, was confirmed, but they're still sort of filling in those lower positions, Office of Special Education Rehabilitation Services, OSERS, and RSA. We hope those will maybe get filled by summer, but we're still waiting to find out. In fact, as we're going on, as I'm here now in Washington, the VR people from the states around the country and in NCSAB, the National Council of State Agencies for the Blind, is also meeting in Washington over the next few days. So hopefully when I get back to Washington, maybe we can, you know, hopefully maybe someone's got their ear to the ground, because Washington loves to leak things, as you may have heard if you've watched the news at all. I wish I were that cool to know that kind of news to leak that would be of interest. But nevertheless, you know, it's an interesting time. So what that's done for us at ACB on the national level is, you know, it's made us have to sort of think about what kind of agenda can we work on that is both focused in the short term, but understanding the long-term issues that are at stake. The slow-moving train that's moving towards us, towards increased incidence, is going to impact us. You know, it cuts into every part of our lives. You know, paratransit is wrestling with it, knowing that there's going to be increases in disability overall, but knowing that blindness is a much faster rate of incidence increase than the larger disability community. I looked at some data from the other year, and it was like 2% disability, while our population increased 7% a few years ago in 1 year spike. So it's creating sort of this interesting thing, from paratransit. What does it mean for housing? Any social services that are out there? How are we going to be able to wrestle with that? You know, I mentioned the Medicare bill. That's an example of just sort of the one of the short-term steps that's, you know, when we start adding up all these steps and building them up, hopefully they can begin to help us sort of wrestle with this this concern. There's a big push in Washington, not just among people who are blind and visually impaired, but the Housing and Urban Development is really looking into this as a cost, particularly Medicaid as well, for institutional care, is how can we help Americans age in place? What are the things that we can do, as small as they can be or as large as they can be, that collectively add up to basically allow us to stay in our homes as we get older, regardless of if it's hearing or vision or other impairments in our life that make it difficult to get out, so that we don't need to move into more costly assisted living situations, or in the worst case scenario, deplete all of our savings so that we can get onto Medicaid and then find ourselves in an institution like a nursing home. So, you know, the Medicare is just one of those examples where what we're wanting to do is in 2008, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, called CMS, had got rid of this eyeglass through an eyeglass exclusion, stop paying for low vision devices that had a lens, which includes a lot of things. So that means if you're on Social Security and you have Medicare, you have a real hard time of getting these things. We're wanting Congress to do a demonstration, which is a fancy word for a research project, believing that You know, it doesn't take rocket science to see the costs and the benefits. If we can do little things to help people stay in their home, that's going to save a lot of money down the road when you start factoring the Medicaid numbers of how much money's spent in institutional care. And as little as it may seem to say that your quality of life is, you know, significantly improved by, let's say, being able to read your prescriptions or forms or things like that, you know, it's these little things along the way that collectively add up. This issue is one of four or five main issues that the American Foundation for the Blind is having, this Aging and Vision Loss in the 21st Century initiative, where they're bringing together a lot of folks from AER, which is a major education rehabilitation group in D.C. that has memberships throughout the country, but also, you know, AACB is actively involved, and this is one of those four steps. They're looking at the Older Visual Blindness Program. They're looking at a lot of these other issues. So we're actively involved with AFB and other groups in Washington and throughout the country for folks. In fact, I'd encourage you to go to afb.org, and if you're not already, it's interesting to sign up for their list, the AVA 21 list, which is an email list, which always has interesting information from healthcare insurance to new statistics and any information that's just of interest that's going out through those lists. That really, I think, is kind of looking forward into where we're going and what can we do to ease the burden that will be placed fiscally on our communities as more and more Americans enter into vision loss and have difficulties trying to get the services they need. You know, this is a big issue to sort of talk about, and I don't want to come here and beat everybody down. Man, East Coasters are so down, and like, you know, Eeyore, like, you know, Wizard of Oz, the East Coast is so dark and glum. You know, what was it, the Witch of the East? So I don't want to come here and bring to sunny California, even though it's raining tonight, I think. I didn't bring that with me. But I don't want to come here and bring down news. But what I will say is I feel like this is an excellent opportunity for us as advocates. You know, oftentimes you get real muddy when you're in the trenches. But, you know, it also is a real sense of a fertile time to really sort of take part in our democracy and really bring around transformative change that, you know, I hope I'll live long enough to be able to say I was part of that then. There, regardless of where you stand ideologically right now in Washington, D.C., one thing is clear. The American populace, we as Americans, have stood up in more times, I think, than history has noted for decades to exercise our right as citizens. We saw it the day after the election with the Women's March on Washington. You know, but it's, again, it's an ideological thing that all sides of the political spectrum are engaged right now. There were a lot of pink hats that day, but there were also a lot of red hats in Washington, too. So we find ourselves at a time where the American citizens are woken up. No longer do we put all of our trust just in elected officials, but we are becoming active participants in our democracy. That's where we, every one of us in this room, comes into play right now. Because we all have a sense of a duty not just to go vote, but to engage our First Amendment right to air our grievances to our government. You know, we always talk about the First Amendment being the freedom of speech and freedom of religion, but there's a third part of our First Amendment that we forget about. We have the right to go to our government and tell them what we think and how we think it needs to operate best. Regardless of where you stand politically, it's a duty that each and every one of us has. So we're entering into an interesting time over the next couple of weeks where Congress is beginning to turn its shift back to the home. What I would send an invitation or even a plea to you, everyone here in this room tonight, is a commitment. And it's a very simple commitment that you will exercise your right as a citizen to engage in your democracy in whatever little way you can. Tell your story to somebody. It could be someone on the bus, or it could be someone in a congressional office here at the district office. But the more that we talk about the issues that are important to us, the more that we create an echo chamber. And I will tell you this, there is a lot, and I mean a lot, of noise right now in Washington, D.C. It is very difficult to go to the Hill now. When we had our Hill Day on February 28th, it was the busiest day I've ever had on the Capitol. It was everybody from every side of the aisle there. The president was giving his speech to the joint session of Congress that night. And it is an exciting time to be in Washington, as crazy as it may seem. And you know, me being sort of the person that's not a Washingtonian by culture at all, I hate ties and suits, which is another reason I'm thankful to come out to California. Thank you. But in that sense, you know, I think that every one of us has an opportunity. And that opportunity is very simple. Find a way to get your story out there on the issues that matter to you. And the issues that don't, just remember, advocate means to speak on behalf of someone. You know, we're all self-advocates from the moment we're born. When the first thing we do when we come out into this world is we scream and cry, right? We speak up. But as an advocate, everyone here in this room is an advocate too, because we just don't talk about ourselves, we talk about others. We talk about our loved ones, our grandparents, our parents, or ourselves, or our children, or whoever, or aunts and uncles. Somebody that means something to us, even if it's ourselves. And we find a way to get engaged. So I encourage you all to find ways in your local chapters, invite a member of Congress or a congressional staffer out to. Has anybody ever invited a congressional person or a staffer to your district meetings? Has anybody done that? Think of that. Think of it. These are simple things. So, you know, I'm in Washington, D.C., happy to whatever we can do to try to put you in touch with people. You know, it's busy times. I'm an email guy. That's me personally. Leave voicemails. I'll try to get back to you as soon as I can. If you ping me on email, you'll hear back from me at 3 a.m., but I'm not going to call you at 3 a.m., I promise. But to that end, you know, I think on a positive issue, too, just to leave, we are making ground on Marrakesh. We reached a compromise between the publishers and the authors. So that's some good news. I leave you with good news there. So we had a meeting with, you know, with the Senate, and they're looking at the Judiciary Committee, last I heard. And the head of the Foreign Relations Committee is willing to push that through. We don't have any dates or anything right now. Congress has a very short attention span, so we're trying to keep that on their focus. But we were glad that we almost had it last year, and the publishers and the libraries hit sort of a stalemate, but we overcame that. So we're fortunate about Marrakesh. You know, there are some things that are going to be happening that are positive in Washington, D.C., so I'm happy to take any questions now or afterwards. I don't know if we have time for Q&A, but you know, in a sense of you know, accessibility too. I'm here tomorrow as well. If folks have any questions or concerns, you're welcome to try to find me. I think someone has a question in the back. Gentleman in the back. Mr. Augusto, I'm fabulous, sir. It's hard to hear you up here. Sorry.
Do we have just a couple of
hold on? Hold on one second, Carl. We have a roaming mic.
Hi. First of all, I just want everyone here to know that if you haven't seen Tony in action, you've seen him tonight. He is an incredible advocate, and ACB is so lucky to have him leading our governmental relations office in D.C. Wow.
You're very kind, Carl.
Secondly, it was very nice to hear you talk about the partnership with that other organization that I'm very fond of called the American Foundation for the Blind. And I'm glad that that partnership continues to thrive. We've enjoyed a very rich tradition between AFB and ACB, and Tony, I know, is an advocate for continuing it. And the third thing is just, I didn't hear you talk about the Cogswell-Macy Act, and I know it's a long-term thing. It might not happen until the education reauthorization, but can you give us a...
You know, I'll say something real quick on education, though, which has been promising. And yes, the Cogswell-Macy Act was reintroduced thanks to Barbara, is her name, that's an advocate for the deaf, that has been very, very solid in getting that help to get that reintroduced. It was something we had some flyers that we, or not flyers, I should say, backgrounders that we all had our members pass out when they came up to Washington, because it was introduced just a couple of days, I think, before we had our Washington conference. As far as climate goes, I will. What was it? Van Jones said to Dr. King, he never said, "I have a complaint. I have a dream." So I will try to be optimistic in the sense of IDEA coming up in this Congress. I don't think realistically it will. At least we've heard that from the Senate side. I haven't had a chance to, I met with a staffer on another issue for Congresswoman Fox, who's the chairwoman of that committee in the House. But, you know, it's not so much on the radar now, but one thing that was promising, there was a lot of fear of how IDEA in general, the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, which Cogswell-Macy sort of would help sort of fix. For those that don't know Cogswell-Macy, it kind of it builds on the fundamental principle that, you know, on education, not everybody's equal. We all come from different places and have different needs in our education, and works to try to remedy the uniqueness that people with sensory disabilities have. You know, it was promising in the Supreme Court decision recently, Andrew F. versus, I'm horrible at remembering this one, I should be sleeping right now, who that was for. But it was a unanimous, the courts have ruled twice unanimous decisions for kids with disabilities in schools, the Supreme Court recently. And it was unanimous. I think it's one of those mom and apple pie things where the messaging is strong, where we say, look, you know, there's $18 million or whatever, not $18 million, but whatever it is being spent on special education. You know, it makes a lot of sense in Cogswell-Macy, the way it's set up, to spend our money wisely, to say we're not throwing the money away in trying to serve students who are blind or deaf or deaf-blind. And it's a message, I think, that's a positive message, that's a bipartisan message. It is not right now on the plate of everything, and I'm an office of one, a department of one. Forgive me for that, Carl, for not wearing the flag tonight for Cogswell-Macy. We have a lot going on, but we're definitely not ignoring it. You know, it's kind of the time and place kind of issue. And I think when the time is right, I think the messaging is continuing to be pushed, and Mark Reichert with AFB is doing an excellent job of really championing education causes, as well as Luta with AER and others that are working in that sphere. And so we're working tangentially on it. It's just not a key imperative right now with the political capital that we have in trying to wrestle with some of the other issues that are priorities right now for us.
One more question.
One more question? Anybody?
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Somebody's getting
first. Oh, I think we got a mic coming.
Yeah. Thank you. Tony, thank you very much for being here. I think we all know that in relative or absolute terms, whether through the budget process, tax law changes, healthcare changes, we all know that to some degree what we broadly call social programs are going to be cut. That creates a dilemma, and what I perceived when we were back in Washington in February was almost a great moral issue facing ACB and organizations like ACB, and that is, are we going to fight along a broad front for preservation of all or as many programs and benefits and services and human needs as we can, or are different constituencies with different interests and different followings going to try to make their own separate pieces, as it were, and pull out the pieces that they can? And that is the great moral struggle that I see going on throughout the human services and nonprofit sector now.
You know, and I'm glad you raised that up. And if folks go to our website, acb.org, and you can search for the 2017 legislative imperatives, one of those was to focus on six issues that I think don't get a lot of talk. You know, when we look at a lot of the talking book services would get cut in the president's budget through the Institute for Museum and Library Services or Science or whatever, IMS, I always get that acronym, IMLS. You know, there are a lot of things that we rely on as people who are blind that are on the chopping block. And it's almost like whack-a-mole. You get one, and then one pops right back up that you're like, I never knew about that. You know, I didn't even know that agency existed. And it's difficult, and it does raise, you know, that moral question, because there were a lot of issues that we, you know, focused on right out of the gate with the administration and the transition. But then you get things that come up that are significant for millions of people. So you have to try to weigh your political capital in Washington. Do we go out and sort of be rogue and focus on these smaller issues that I know the larger disability community doesn't get behind us? Of course we do, because sometimes you got to speak out on those issues. And you know, I feel like we were able to do that in looking through some of the feedback. You know, there's key feedback that we get back from people that sounds like some of those messages resonating. And in a sense, though, too, we have to focus on the larger issue, and it's finding that balance right now in Washington. And it's a challenge. It is a real challenge for everybody because, you know, there's also, I didn't even mention the ADA notifications, education notifications bill, which we've gone on working with other disability groups, which could very much curtail after some people might have checked out that 60 Minutes piece on ADA drive-by lawyers that came out back in November, December, whenever it was. That's resonated a lot across both sides of Congress, and there's a bill now that we're very much fighting to try to you know stop. Basically, it's the small shopping centers lobby group, like strip malls. Shopping centers are really pushing hard against pushing for this bill, and you know it's like things like that pop up right when you're feeling like you're making ground in another area. So it's a constant juggling act in Washington. And it is measuring that. So, you know, we try to focus on the short term, but you have to focus on the long term. And it's the best steps toward moving forward are, yes, we're going to get some punches. Yes, we're going to get hurt. Yes, we're going to get knocked down. And there could be some hard times ahead, which is more important as to why we need to align short term with long term and make sure that everything we do in the short term is sustaining the long term to carry us over that wave. I remember I tried surfing once on teeny tiny East Coast waves when I could still see nothing compared to like out here. But, you know, you got to really, really work just to get, you know, a few seconds of opportunity in the long term. So a lot of short term paddling. So, you know, our hope is that we can try to set forward a legislative agenda that tries to wrestle with that more moral issue you're talking about. Because otherwise, you can't sleep at night. If you sit there and think of everything that's at risk, it can be overwhelming, to be just honest, you know? Did that answer your question? That was a long soliloquy. I apologize. You know, I want to thank you all so much. I have, my mother and father were married in Monterey, so in some sense, I'd like to think I sort of came out of California. And so I will say that it's nice to get out here whenever I do get out here, even though I brought rain. But thank you. This is a wonderful opportunity to get to meet some of you, and I hope to meet more of you over the next 24, 48 hours whenever I'll be flying back. But again, thanks to Judy and Jeff and everyone else. And let us know what we can do in the national office. We're there to help you. But I give you a plea, too, to help us by going out and telling your story. Thank you.
Tony, thank you very much. And we're going to keep the theme going here. We're going to go from the national to the state, and we're going to hear from our chair of governmental affairs, Jeff Tom, to talk to us about state legislative issues.
Okay, good evening.
Hello.
I gotta get myself together here, but while I do, I wanna make a couple of shout outs to various people. But first, we truly are lucky to have Tony Stevens. I was thrilled when I heard we were gonna have him as our hire for ACB. So let's give him one more round of applause. I don't know if she's here. I don't think she is, but whether she is or isn't, I know Pat can deliver our appreciation. I wanted to give a shout out to Jacqueline Jackson for her, yes, for her being chosen as Advocate of the Year down in San Diego in her Assemblyman's district.
Yeah.
That's just the type of advocate we need in ACB, and Jacqueline is somebody to really be proud of. I wanted to, you know, one of the things that I'm involved in on behalf of this organization, it was briefly mentioned by Tony, was the AFB-led, although now it's being led by a number of people, 21st century effort on aging. I've been on a number of calls. I would have been on more, but my wife dragged me off to Maui. I didn't want to go, but, you know, had to. So, and that's just an outstanding effort nationally. And I want to, the shout out I want to give with respect to California is one of the things that I did is forward to them the links for all the hearing and vision impairment calls that our committee here in California has done on deaf blindness issues, because they are outstanding, and I want to hear some applause for that committee's work. Mike Keithley, Annette Carter, the whole group, they're to be commended. Okay. Wanted to talk about some of the things that I have been doing on your behalf. A couple weeks ago, I was part of a strategic planning process that Disability Rights California put together, and they had, as part of their strategic planning, a panel on issues relating to blindness and deafness, and I participated as your representative on that panel. And, you know, we hope that in their strategic plan there'll be more about our issues. We'll see what comes of it. But they're here this weekend. Come talk to them. DRC is really trying to be progressive and responsive to your needs. And so make them welcome and give them your input. We have had a part to play, a small though it be, in the American Health Care Act. We are involved, and I want to thank the Judy and the board for this. We are involved in a coalition for long-term care services and supports in California, which is made up of dozens of advocacy, civil rights, healthcare provider organizations. And through that coalition, we have weighed in on many of the problems that the AHCA would cause. Most gravely for California could be the loss of millions and millions of dollars in Medicaid funding, which would hurt in-home supportive services and would also hurt people on disabilities with respect to many of the optional services conceivably that Medicaid currently provides in a number of other areas as well. And I'll come back to some of the other problems that the AHCA is causing in California, just the very presence of a bill. I'll come back to that in a minute. I have been working, and you're going to hear a resolution on it this weekend. I have been working informally with a group of orientation and mobility instructors. There is a real problem, both in this state and nationally, and I hope we bring it to the attention of ACB this summer. More and more school districts, for liability and other reasons, are putting into place restrictions on the ability of special education instructors and O&M instructors to give instruction off campus. And if you can't go off campus, you can't learn very much orientation and mobility. So you will hear a resolution on that, I am quite sure, on Sunday. Let's talk a little bit about guide dogs. We, of course, had the great victory of SB 1331 last year, and we were certainly thrilled today to give Senator Fran Pavley a much-deserved award for everything that she and her staff did to shepherd that bill through. Well, I shouldn't have used the word shepherd, should I? especially because of all the yellow and golden labs out there. Okay, but we did suffer a setback this year, last year too. Our bill to increase the scope of penalties by persons whose dogs attack service animals was vetoed by the governor. In large part, it was vetoed because we took some amendments that put in some requirements he didn't like. We're going to take those amendments out. Unfortunately, we did not get a sponsor for it this year. But this year is a tougher year because it's the first year and you can't really get started till January. And we didn't have much time. So this time we're going to start in the fall. And we are going to get ourselves a sponsor again next year. And we're going to meet the governor's demands and we're going to get this bill through. So that's something we're working on for next year. We don't know what the bill number will be, but we're going to do something. The other guide dog related issue we have is AB 1705. That is a bill that would extend the guide dog board for 4 years. We passed a resolution about 4 or 5 years ago that said if the guide dog board wasn't willing to work with us on reforms, then we would ask for the repeal of the guide dog board. They were not. They opposed us at every turn. Not Joni Patchy out there. I don't want to say that every board member did, but the majority did. And so we are taking a position, along with NFB, opposed to the extension of the board. It's an uphill battle this time, but I think we need to begin to express our grave concerns to the legislature, make them realize that the board is really not necessary like it once was, and set the groundwork with them and with the schools for future action. And we'll see in the coming years whether the board becomes something that is more respectful and responsive to guide dog users or less. We don't know. We'll see what can happen. SSI, I am proud to say we are the one major blindness organization that is active in the Californians for SSI coalition, and that's as it should be. Last year, after many years of cuts and stagnations in SSI to the point where the amount that SSI recipients get is below the poverty level, below 100% of the poverty level, we finally got the first increase in state money for SSI in many, many years. Yes, it was under $10 a month, so it wasn't much of an increase, but we have a governor who's very conservative when it comes to putting new money in, and with good reason, he's tried to push, and he has successfully taken the California economy back from the brink in terms of our public fiscal situation and done a great job in that area. But what it does cause is our programs do suffer short shrift sometimes, and SSI has certainly been one of them. We do have another bill, AB 796, this year on that area. It will go pretty far, but again, I don't expect it to pass. And in part, it won't pass because the governor is very concerned about what will happen in Washington, D.C. If we lose millions of dollars in Medicaid money, which it is possible we will, then there's a big budget hole in the state budget right there. And the governor doesn't want to do anything which is going to further jeopardize our budget. And so any increases in programs of human services are very likely to be, you know, not approved by this governor this year. We'll see what happens, but it's an uphill battle. Okay, a number of you have heard about this already, and so I really want to give even some more detail tonight. We are opposing another bill, AB 1103. AB 1103 is a bill by the bicycle coalitions that would basically allow bicyclists, if they feel it is safe, to roll through stop signs and to make turns at stop signs. Up until today, it had a provision in it that, well, it didn't help us too much, but it would have required a hand signal when you were going through the stop sign. unless you were unsafe by taking your hand off the bike, it said. But they took that out, and I'm not completely sure of all the reasons, but one of the things it does, it helps their bill in one respect, because in California legislation, there's what's called a physical committee key. And a bill has to go to physical committee if it has any kind of savings or cost to it. And one way a bill has a cost is when it creates a crime. And this bill, this hand signal requirement, would have been an infraction. So by taking it out, they now don't have to go to the fiscal committees of the legislature, which means they only have to go to one committee in each house. I found out today that the hearing is on April 17th. So if I have anybody that wants to go around to offices with me next week, and especially if we have people that want to come up for that hearing, and I'll get you the time and the room number on Monday, we need everybody there we can get. You're only going to probably be able to say your name and that you oppose the bill, but the more people in the room, the better it is for our side of the fence. And I urge people who can make it to Sacramento on the 17th to do that and to make your voices heard in the Assembly Transportation Committee. I don't know who our other allies are going to be as yet. I have heard that the Chamber of Commerce so far is neutral, which is good. Yeah, I agree with that. So, you know, this is the type of bill that I don't even think it's all that safe for, all that creates all that much more safety for bicyclists. And it certainly doesn't create any safety for pedestrians. So it's a bill we need to work hard to stop. I don't know if there's any time for questions. I think that's all I'm going to, those are the highlights that I wanted to hit tonight. I just want to mention that we are definitely one of those states that are hit hard by the ending of the uncompensated care homemaker closure type requirements. You've heard it before. Our rehabilitation program it's going to cause our recipients a real problem. But we do have some good folks, Mitch Pomerantz and Jason Holloway, on that committee. And I know they're working hard to try and do something to address those issues, but that's going to be a tough one. And we're certainly going to be vigilant on that issue as well during the years to come. So with that, do we have time for a question or two?
Yes.
Okay. Any questions? All right.
Yeah, we have one here.
It often drives me crazy that there doesn't seem to be any mechanism to combat what I guess we call siloism, even in state government. In this case, I mean, for example, one of the implications of the change in the homemaker closure, and I'll grant that I've never been a fan of that. I thought it was badly overused and often a cop-out. But nonetheless, one of the consequences of that is going to be a potentially dramatic increase in the number of premature nursing home admissions. Now, that costs the state money in terms of its share of the Medicaid costs that are going to go into those. Is there any capacity within state government to make the case to the governor's budget office that they have to do a cost-benefit analysis of both things together to do what I guess we would call dynamic scoring for anything to make any sense?
Can somebody repeat the question?
I don't think we understood the question.
My question is this. We have a problem, for example, in the curtailment of the homemaker closure options. Now, that is perceived on one level as not necessarily having any serious fiscal implications for the states. It has terrible implications for the people who don't get services, but no one has addressed it, so far as I know, in terms of its fiscal implications for the state. Its fiscal implications for the state are tremendous, are huge, because it's going to result in an increase, potentially a very significant increase, in the number of premature and otherwise unnecessary nursing home admissions, which the state is going to have to help pay for through its share of Medi-Cal. So is there any capacity in state government? Is there any means by which advocates can get the governor's budget office to engage in some kind of a dynamic scoring system which would make the combined implications of two seemingly separate, but not at all really separate, programmatic initiatives into question?
No. The governor feels that he has expanded Medi-Cal to a great degree, which he has. He's signed an awful lot in a Medi-Cal expansion. And I don't think there's any... He did get one tax through on a healthcare plan tax, and that tax may or may not go away depending upon a lot of things, variables. But I don't think there's any real desire for any other broad-based Medicaid initiatives. In fact, it is very possible that one of the state's dual Medi-Cal, Medicare programs will stop, one of the pilot project programs.
There's going to be, whether the governor or you or I or anyone else likes it or not, a tremendous increase in the number of people whose Medicaid eligibility, which already exists under law, will now include nursing home admissions that would otherwise not be necessary, and those are more expensive. That's going to cost the state money, potentially a great deal of money. Is there no way in the world to bring that forcibly, if not ultimately effectually, to the state's attention?
I'm not sure I understand.
Yeah, I think this is a question for another day.
Okay. Okay, I finally get the question. Sorry, Steve. We're too small of a slice of the pie to make that understandable in California anyway. Because the number of those homemaker cases in actual terms is so minuscule. The number of potential homemaker cases might have been greater, but the number that they are actually serving as homemakers is really small potatoes in comparison to...
Do we know those numbers?
What's being served by the Medi-Cal program generally.
What are those numbers?
Somebody's asking, do we know those numbers?
Yes, do we know
I don't have them right here, but they're pretty, but they're less than a third of, you know, blindness closures. Even those closures in that system are only about a third of blindness closures. And blindness closures are a small pittance of the number of disability closures generally.
Well, we take those
and
numbers.
Most of the non-blindness closures are not homemaker chore. We are the one disability affected most by that.
We take those numbers and we multiply them by the cost, the annual cost, to put one person into a nursing home, and then how many that would be. It would be a lot of money. And we present that to him in some manner, quickly.
Don't have that figure.
Well... That's inertia. We need those figures. It needs to go before the governor, and we need to shake him up and keep that money.
Okay, your point is made. Thank you very much. Can we move on, please?
Doesn't look like we have any other questions.
Okay. Well, Jeff, thanks again for a great report.
Okay, thank you very much.
And... I think the message from both of our advocates is very clear that each of us has an important role to play in engaging with our communities and our governments in making life better for blind Californians. That concludes the items of agenda at this session. So I am prepared to bring this session to recess to begin again tomorrow afternoon at 1:30. Everybody have a good evening.